Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and normally I meet with veterans to learn about what they do in their civilian career to give people on active duty a sense of what they can do after their military service. Today, we're going to be talking about resources available beyond the uniform. We're going to talk about the Commit Foundation in episode 154 with Anne Marie Craig.
And so I wrote a paper for him on how I saw that high-performing veterans were being underserved because people assumed that they would transition well. And I gave him the paper, and he called me, and he said, "We're doing this, and you're going to run it." I said, wow, I know nothing about, you know, starting a nonprofit. And so, you know, I had to start in the basics, and that's the right way to do it, right? You know, having to sort of learn in the mailroom and work my way up, and I continue to learn every year.
Well, I knew very little about the Commit Foundation prior to today's interview, but the things that I took away from our conversation make me extremely confident that this is a great and free resource that every veteran should consider as part of their transition to a civilian career. The Commit Foundation is great because they really take a veteran where they want to go with their career just a whole lot faster, like a jetpack. They take a very individual approach with each veteran. They know everyone has different skills, different ambitions, different likes and dislikes. And so they really tailor their approach to help instill these veterans with information, with confidence, and with imagination. Having worked with so many veterans over the years, Anne Marie has some fantastic advice for veterans, especially about interviews. It's some of the best advice on interviewing I've heard on the show. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes. You'll find links to all the different things that we talk about today. You'll also have the ability to leave a positive review on iTunes. It'd be greatly appreciated. It helps to get the word out about the show. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Anne Marie Craig. Joining me today in Bozeman, Montana is Anne Marie Craig. Anne Marie, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you for having me, Justin.
I wanted to give listeners a quick background on Anne Marie. She is the executive director and co-founder of the Commit Foundation, which is changing the way that highly talented veterans think about transition, as well as creating serendipity for them by fostering mentorship, networking, and inspiration. She is also a member of the board of directors for Bunker Labs. And Anne Marie, maybe just to start off, for someone who's on active duty right now, how would you describe the Commit Foundation and what you do there?
Sure. So our mission is to ensure that post 9/11 veterans, after serving in uniform, have purpose, both personally and professionally. We, as you mentioned, we said that we aim to create serendipity for veterans, and that's by working on these three gaps that we've seen that most veterans have: a gap in information, a gap in confidence, and a gap in imagination.
Mm. I love that. So that was information, confidence, and imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to actually dive into each of those, because that's so funny. After 140 plus veteran interviews, I'm just kind of quickly going through. I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, a lot of the pain points people do talk about fall into those buckets. And so maybe when you talk about imagination, what are some kind of common things that you see veterans do that might show not fully embracing that imagination for their life?
Yeah, you know, we in the military, you usually know where you're going. If there is a certain rank that you want to get to or a certain unit that you want to get to, there's usually a predetermined path on how to get there. And so we've seen that while it serves the military well to have the rank and structure that they do, it also causes veterans to be a bit myopic and have a bit of tunnel vision when they're leaving uniform. And we've seen that quite often results in an imagination gap. You know, as we speak about the three gaps, the information one, we see that they're that they're not prepared to think through how their skill sets transfer into something new. And then the confidence gap, it seems, in spite, no matter what they've done in uniform, we see them lacking that confidence a bit when you start to talk about, you know, for example, I was an intelligence analyst, and I remember hearing M&A for the first time. And for me, you know, that was not mergers and acquisitions. That was Middle East, North Africa. So, you know, you have these sort of gaps in how you think about things. And then, you know, when you sort of fumble, they cause gaps in confidence. And again, it's really interesting to see someone with a lot of bravado who kicks down doors every night all of a sudden lack confidence when it comes to the next steps. And then finally, in the imagination gap, again, we see so many folks be very literal about how their skill sets will translate. You know, I was a military policeman, so I'll go do physical security for something, rather than taking that time to think through what their goals are, what's truly, you know, that fire in their belly as they think through the whole host of possible. And it can be pretty intimidating to think about a blank canvas at the end of a military career, where you really should let your imagination go crazy and figure out what's next. But we encourage our program participants to be empowered by it, that, you know, for the first time, you get to pick where you're going. The military isn't telling you where you have to go. And so we like to think that our programming helps them explore and fill in those gaps of information, confidence, and imagination.
I think that's so great. I when you mentioned confidence, I think of an interview I did with Joe Musselman, who started the Honor Foundation, and he tells this incredible story of this, I believe it was an Admiral Navy SEAL who, you know, broke down in tears when he was thinking of like what he was going to do and the uncertainty and trying to figure out how he would provide for his family after his active duty service. And I think that, you know, for me, that story of, if this is an Admiral and a Navy SEAL, both of which are such an exceptional accomplishment, to see that there's still that lack of confidence and certainty about what to do, it gives me the sense that I'm not alone in that. And, you know, that was definitely my experience as well, of not really knowing and having that confidence. And I also love what you said about that information gap. It was the same for me. Your M&A story for me, it was at business school, sitting down with an investment banker, which is a very popular career path in the financial services industry. And I thought an investment banker was like a teller at a bank. I just had no concept of, you know, these people on Wall Street who are actively investing and learning about where to invest. And could you speak a little bit about how you guys address that? Like, so if someone listening reaches out to the Commit Foundation, how do you help them with the information gap, with that confidence gap, and that imagination gap?
Yeah, so one thing I really pride about our work is that Commit has always and will always focus on the quality of service rather than the quantity served. And we're very big about going deep with individuals. And we think that the impact you're having on someone is much more important than how many people you're serving. And I bring that up because how our approach is based on an individual. You know, to take your example, the Admiral Navy SEAL, you know, I think it's really important for people to realize it's not important what your rank is. It's not important what your service or your MOS were, because when it comes to transition, it goes back onto a person, you know, and if you have a family, then the self-identification, knowing thyself, and then really turning back into your family and realizing that this is your unit and this is your team and how are we going to move forward together. So our programming has, certainly up front, a good bit of reflection. We brought in the book Designing Your Life out of the Stanford Design School so that transitioning service members and recently transitioned veterans could do some assessments around their values, both their work values, their life values, and really thinking through what their life post-military looks like. All the way down to, you know, how many times you're picking your kids up from school, what the coffee smells like in the new environment, what you're wearing to work. And so really being able to see yourself in a new you know, in a new culture and on a new team. And so that's where we start. And we build services around individuals. And so, you know, I use the example, even though some folks think it might sound silly, you know, if I've got somebody that needs a tutu and dance lessons, I'll make sure they have it. You know, over the past 6.5 years, we have ensured that our one-on-one transition services toolbox has everything in it to tailor solutions for individuals. We think that a one-size-fits-all approach is not the way to approach military transition. And again, really big on getting to know someone and then determining what that person's plan is and how we're going to enable it and get them to where they want to be.
That's great. I mean, that definitely resonates, this one-to-one approach. And, you know, that's been the intention behind Beyond the Uniform, is that everyone, their life circumstances, their ambitions, their talents, their skills, they're so very unique. And so there isn't one answer in terms of what to do or even how to get there. And so I love that you take that individual approach. How does that work if someone is listening and what you're saying really connects with them? How would they go about trying to get involved with the Commit Foundation?
Yeah, I mean, the best first step is to simply go to our website, commitfoundation.org, and go to programs. And we essentially have three lines of operation. And for the first step, if you go to our one-on-one transition programming, there's a application that you fill out. And, you know, I encourage folks to be thorough. I think it's really important. The more information that you give us, the more informed and better conversation that we can have the first time we speak with you. And so that's the best place to start. That ends up turning into a phone conversation with our director of veteran services and then a plan. And a lot of times the plan involves attending a workshop that might be in the area, or a workshop, a mentoring workshop that is perhaps in a field that you're interested in, because at times we do mentoring workshops around certain themes. But that's the process. We're really excited. In 2018, we're rolling out a new program called VTC. It's a Veteran Transition Coaching Program, which really is the culmination of 6 years of work, but put into a efficient, effective piece of software so that transitioning service members are able to track their progress, go back, reflect, interact with coaches. One thing that Commit is pretty adamant about is life coaches and executive coaches. Over the past 6 years, I have learned that the greatest gift I can give someone is a coach. Who has the right tools to help individuals in transition work through things, and also who has zero cards in the game, who can actively listen and reflect and help you come to things that you already know. When you're talking about transition plans with spouses and family members, everybody sort of has a bias. And so I have found that coaching is a big enabler for transitioning service members. And so we're really excited to be releasing that program in February of 2018.
That's great. And I would love to learn as that gets released. I'll do a plug when that comes out so listeners can know to check that out. And I 100% agree with you on the coaching front. And for longtime listeners, you've probably heard me talk about coaching in a variety of ways. And, you know, I work with my company Storybox with an executive coach and have done so for years. And I agree with what you said, having that person who's not personally invested in the outcome of your situation allows you to have someone who asks you the tough but necessary questions to lead to that insight. And my experience has been, this is not someone who has the answers. It's just someone who can ask helpful questions and also provide observations of things that we do or say that may not make sense and give us room to reflect on what that might mean. So I really love the way that you've structured that, of combining the 6 years of experience along with different coaches and mentors to help a veteran get to where they want to go.
Yep.
Could you talk a little bit about the genesis of the Commit Foundation and where this all came from?
Yeah, so I feel very blessed to have served in the intelligence community after 9/11. And not only was I able to deploy with the military and understand what it was like to play the Super Bowl every single night, but I also married into it. And while I'm not the only person who's been in that role, I do feel like it gives me a unique perspective to understand that drive and the passion when deployed, but then also know what it's like to receive a warrior home from combat. So I wasn't exactly excited about leaving the government, but we had young kids and the lifestyle wasn't really conducive. And as I looked for a way to continue to serve and give back, Commit was born from that. And in my mind, if we can ensure that folks are getting involved in their in communities, in companies, in organizations locally, and that if it's a well thought through process, and that they feel just as passionate about what they're doing on a daily basis as they did in uniform, then we're making the nation a stronger and safer place. And so that's what drives that. You know, that was the original thought behind the programming. A handful of us came together in 2011 and wrote out a strategy and an approach. And we started with a mentoring workshop and started building one-on-one transition services. And we've demonstrated smart strategic growth over the past 6 years, and I'm really excited about what we have in front of us over the next three as well. Again, my biggest goal, you know, a lot of nonprofits, I think they try to solve every piece of the puzzle, and it dilutes their work at times. And with Commit, what we decided to do is focus on doing what we do well, and that's people and relationships, with this goal of enabling folks, of creating serendipity, so that when they cross that threshold from the professional world into their personal life at the end of the day, that that the household is what it needs to be. I mean, that's what gets me going every day.
That's awesome. And I realize, too, as you're talking about this, you know, you also have a part of your story, which is starting your own organization and starting your own company. And I know a lot of listeners aspire to do exactly what you've done, to start something from scratch and to grow that. I'm curious, could you speak to kind of when you started, how you thought about whether you wanted to go and become a nonprofit versus a for-profit, and maybe what that process was like actually incorporating and getting the company going?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I started a small consulting firm. I had been in the national security world, and I started a small consulting firm in 2011. And actually, one of my clients was a West Pointer. His name was Guy Filippelli. He was a 1997 West Point grad, successful entrepreneur. And he tasked me with doing an assessment of the veteran service space to see how he should get involved. He had just had a successful exit. He wanted to give back. And one of many tasks that I had from him was to do an assessment of the space. And so I wrote a paper for him on how I saw that high-performing veterans were being underserved because people assumed that they would transition well. And I gave him the paper, and he called me, and he said, "We're doing this, and you're going to run it." Wow, I know nothing about, you know, starting a nonprofit. And so, you know, I had to start in the basics, and that's the right way to do it, right? You know, having to sort of learn in the mailroom and work my way up, and I continue to learn every year. But at the time, you know, I had a for-profit entity, which was my consulting firm that I had started, and then we were starting a not-for-profit. And I think, you know, one of the smartest things that I was told about starting a nonprofit is to run it like a for-profit. And it's some of the best advice I've ever been given. You know, I think the required transparency that comes with a nonprofit and the 501c3 status is actually an enabler. Because everything you, not, I mean, not that folks would do anything nefarious if it's not so transparent, but you know, everything you do is audited and public, you know, all the way down to salaries and who you give to. And, you know, I think that coupled with this greater cause and one that for me was extremely genuine and authentic, having observed my husband's and a lot of our friends' transitions, really drove me to give it everything I had. You know, in the veteran service space, when you have over 45,000 veteran organizations, you can run into challenges where you lose focus. And I've always found that I can find my North Star by hopping on the phone with a transitioning veteran, and that, you know, in 20 minutes, I can change their outlook on something and get them sort of moving in perhaps a better direction. And so I've thoroughly enjoyed the work. And while a for-profit entity might provide me a path to greater revenue streams, I just can hardly even speak to the satisfaction of facilitating serendipity for folks and the ability, how quickly and how heartening it is to know how quickly you can change someone's life by taking a little bit of time, thought, and effort into listening to them and putting together a plan.
That's beautiful. I love that. I love, too, the way that came about from a paper and an insight. And then I admire your and Guy's bias towards action of just seeing that opportunity and that need and not hesitating and going for it. That's really admirable.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you've done an interview with him, but he's worth doing an interview with. Guy and I, you know, when it comes to veteran issues and national security, we've always sort of seen eye to eye. And those are the two capacities that we work together. I had worked with him when he was the special assistant to General Alexander at the NSA. And he's the chairman of the board and has enabled me. And probably the biggest thing that I am so grateful to him for is just giving me the space to learn and to grow this organization in a way that was authentic to me and my family's experiences and to what we thought was the best way, you know, to build out the programming.
That's incredible. Is there, you know, as you think of all the different veterans you've worked with, I'm just curious if there's any common misconceptions that you see that someone on active duty might have about either their transition to a civilian career or what their civilian career will look like.
Yeah. I'm taking a note or two. Hold on. I think the first thing that comes to mind is just timeline, and perhaps thinking that they don't need as much time as they need. You know, I think in an ideal world, if someone can really start to work on that transition about 18 months before separation, I think that's a really sweet spot. And I think the first 6 months should be spent on self-exploration and knowing thyself and getting back in tune to, I am an individual. You know, most of our quiet professionals and our military servicemen and women get so used to the collective. We did this, the team did that, this is our mission. And so really, you know, again, self-identifying and thinking through what life post-uniform means. So that timeline piece, I think, is critical. And then, you know, there's four things, and we usually talk about these things in conjunction with interviewing, but we talk about preparation, right? So you would never hit an objective without being better prepared than the enemy. Treat your transition the same way. Treat your interviews the same way. I mean, the amount of preparation you can do to have smart discussions with folks, you need to throw a lot into that. And I think folks know that. For some reason, a lot of folks think it's just going to come natural. We think that storytelling is extremely important. I think there are a lot of veterans that think that leadership stories sort of will roll off their tongue. And if they don't take the time to actually stop and practice those with friends in front of the mirror and really think through those maybe 3 to 5 stories about your military career, that will articulate what you've actually done, and also get used to talking about yourself, because service members usually aren't that good talking about themselves. Most of them are quiet professionals and show up and get the job done. And so, you know, preparing, storytelling. And then the last two, I would say, you know, I think that there needs to be some humility with the process. When you have 99% of a country that doesn't serve, we can't assume that they know how good you are. We can't assume that they know, you know, what a logistician did or what an intel analyst did or not Sky. And so having a little humility with the process and not getting frustrated. And then finally, and again, this is more when you're sort of actually looking for opportunities, we talk to veterans about de-risking opportunities. There's so many creative ways these days that you can use your terminal leave or the Skill Bridge program to actually spend some time in a company or organization to see if it's what you really want to do and where you want to really be. And so I think, you know, again, and that sort of takes us full circle back into timeline, because if you're going to do those things, you need to build your network, you need to make the connections in order to enable those things to happen. And I think if you think through some of those things, it'll help set you up for success.
That's fantastic, Anne-Marie. I mean, I think as I think of my own experiences, I think of the 140 interviews I've done, the guidelines you gave there on interviews is so incredibly spot on. And I love the crispness with which you articulated it, and the buckets you put those into. Seems like it really covers the gamut of things necessary to know. And one of the ones I just wanted to drill in briefly is, you know, you talked about something that's an observation I've seen as well, is this thought that veterans do not do well selling themselves, that sales is very much a dirty word, and they will speak to no end about their team's accomplishment or the unit's accomplishment, but when it comes to time to sit in an interview and really sell themselves and talk about what they accomplished and why they'd be great in the role, they really turn down the volume in a way that I think sets them at a disadvantage to civilian counterparts who are very adept and very well qualified about speaking about themselves in a way that I think most veterans would consider boastful or off-putting. And I'm just wondering if there is any advice you would have about how a veteran might be comfortable or get to be comfortable speaking about themselves and their accomplishments in a way that feels right, but also would represent them well in a civilian interview.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think practice is key, and some of that comes with writing. You know, I think that there's a lot of merit in journaling. It's something that we bring some of our vets through, and I know some of them cringe when they hear that word, but there is a power in being able to put your story to paper and then actually, again, practicing those stories. And I think one of the most important things, particularly the folks, you know, we're not a special operations, a soft specific organization, but we do have a large amount of soft folks that come through. You know, there is a way to talk about your work without getting into your unit or an operation. You know, a lot of folks are quiet and don't know how to talk about it, and they say it's classified. You know, you're really putting some constraints on yourself. You can very easily talk about work you've done in embassies, you know, across the interagency, et cetera, in a way that doesn't release, you know, classified information. And all that comes again, I think, with writing it down and with practicing. Another great tool that Commit offers at no cost to veterans is we provide interview coaches, all the way from, you know, interviewing for a job at Facebook to a case-based interview process if someone's going out into the management consulting world. So we're big believers in preparation and coaches to help prepare our service members.
This is fantastic. Is there a cost associated for someone working with the Commit Foundation?
There is not. All services are provided at no cost.
I just think that that's you know, from what you've described, there is no reason why every single veteran should not be applying, should not be looking at this. Like the insights and the depth of experience you bring to the table, it just seems like at no cost, even if it was a cost associated, it would be worth doing it. But at no cost, it just seems like such an incredible resource that would be a no-brainer for a listener to look at.
Yeah, I mean, the one caveat I would have is the cost is your showing up and being present and being willing to work.
Yeah.
We are by no means an organization that just hands things out, and we're selective in our application process and in our screening process. And the requirements are that people are post 9/11 and that they have fire in their belly. And we're really looking for that fire in their belly piece throughout the application process. We want to know they're hungry to show up because, as you mentioned, I mean, we do invest a significant amount of dollars into everybody that comes through the program. You know, we helped Stanford Business School build the Stanford Ignite for Veterans program. We helped Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth build the NextSec program. Because of that, we offer scholarships to those programs. We offer all types of professional development scholarships, whether it's coding or learning UI, UX, you name it. But again, people really have to show up, and we have to know that it's a smart investment because we do open up a whole host of opportunities for folks that come through our program. So that would be the only caveat is the willingness to work.
That's great. You know, an observation I've seen is that I think in the military, a lot of us get conditioned to, I think in many ways, veterans are very autonomous and very proactive. But I think in a lot of ways, we also get used to being spoon-fed when we need to go to the doctor and the dentist. And we know that, you know, every single piece of training will come to us. And so in some ways, we become reactive in expecting resources to come to us. And so I love that distinction and focus on that fire in the belly or that grit or that hustle, where I can see the value of finding those entrepreneurs who are willing to put in the work, who are willing to roll up their sleeves and really go after whatever it is they're looking for. And it seems like, you know, from an outsider's perspective, it seems like you are giving veterans a jetpack to accelerate them in whatever direction they're going to. But that person has to have the initiative to be willing to figure out which direction they want to point and which, you know, and to be taking those steps and sprinting in that direction. You're just going to accelerate them in that direction, but it's not like you're doing everything for them.
Yeah, I like that analogy. I mean, we have found historically, I get asked the question sometimes, how many people do we turn away? And folks in our program self-select. If there is ever a hint of a lack of desire to work or get after it, usually they self-select out. You know, maybe we ask them to, you know, lay out five industries, why they've chosen them, why they think one company would resonate more with the other, you know, than another. And if somebody's not willing to work, then they're not going to stop and do the assignment, if you will. And so, you know, it's very rare when we have to turn someone away. But if for some reason someone doesn't come through the program, it's usually because they don't show up.
That's great. I'm wondering, if there, and you've already mentioned some, and I'll put these in the show notes, you talked about designing your life, and I'll add that for listeners. But I'm wondering, are there any other resources that could be books, conferences, podcasts, anything that if someone's on active duty right now, they could get a hold of today that might help them prepare for their transition in their civilian career?
We are always bringing books in, and there's always a running book list associated with our workshops. I'm a big believer. I love Peter Thiel's work. I love anything that comes out of Andreessen Horowitz, both Mark Andreessen and Ben Horowitz's work. I'm a big fan of the A16Z podcast, and I spend a lot of time there. A lot of that is, you know, edge technologies and AI, and just sort of keeping abreast on things there. Again, we start with designing your life, and we bring in some stuff by Dr. Tick and some stuff from the Center for Brain Health and the Marcus Institute. We're big believers in folks getting their whole self healthy. But, you know, most of our, when we, you know, assign those types of books, they're usually, again, associated with one individual based off their career plan. So those are the few things that come to mind, but maybe I get back to you on a book list. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, that's great. That's great. And then I guess one other question I had, it's two aspects. One is just in general, given that the Commit Foundation doesn't charge veterans, how do you make money and stay in business? And the second piece of that is I realize that many of the listeners to the show have transitioned 10, 20 years ago, and they may want to support or be involved or in some way help the Commit Foundation, even though they don't need the transition assistance. Could you speak to both of those?
Yeah, for sure. So how do we make money and stay in business? I learned a long time ago that as long as I'm creating value, I'm not going to have a problem funding our programs. And I think that's what we do. So we don't do referral fees and, we're not a placement agency, but we're really big on, again, going through that self-exploration, figuring out what makes someone tick, getting them to where they need to be, and hopefully adding value to the organization that they're involved with. And so a lot of times, that comes back to us through corporate giving or corporate social responsibility giving. We are blessed to have a tremendous network of mentors that enable us, sure, with financial gifts, but probably most importantly with their time as they mentor our veterans. And then I've got a ridiculous team. The Commit team itself is pretty awesome. And so my director of development, Julie Kaufman, helps us navigate the grant process. And so we've done well, and I'm really excited that we've got some pretty significant gifts coming over the next few years that we'll be announcing soon that are really going to help us take the organization to the next level. And then folks that have, transitioned and want to get involved, again, there's multiple ways that you can get involved. And, we have something called a Pay It Forward Fund, which we're really proud of. And 100% of anything given into the Pay It Forward Fund goes right back into one-on-one transition services for veterans. So that's a great way to give to Commit. And then also, we are always looking for folks to come share their story at our workshops. And, our workshops, we don't focus on how to write a resume and how to interview. We have folks talk about serendipitous moments in their career, unexpected paths to success, how to overcome crisis in the private sector. And we pick topics because we've seen that veterans need to rid themselves of that notion of a predetermined path. They need to realize that failure in the private sector at times is embraced and makes you even more successful. So they need to get rid of that military definition of failure. And we've seen that the topics that we talk about in our workshop really get rid of those gaps that we talked about at the beginning of this conversation in information, confidence, and imagination. So, while sure, I would be foolish to say that we wouldn't appreciate fiscal donations because that's definitely what keeps us going, but we really also appreciate folks giving with their time. And, a fundamental at Commit is that 30 minutes of quality dialogue can change one's perspective and thus their trajectory. And we see ourselves as great facilitators of extraordinary conversation. And that's really where the magic happens in our programs.
That's great. And I will, for listeners, I'll add a link to the Pay It Forward Fund. I think that's exceptional that you do that. And I always like to end with just more of an open-ended question, and that's that we've covered so much that will be valuable to listeners, but I'm sure there's things we didn't cover that you'd like to share or talk about. So anything else that you would like to share with listeners?
I would just share, in last year we sat down and wrote a three-year strategy, and one of the biggest, most important things for me this year is I want to continue to spread the notion of quality over quantity in the space. We have a country where less than 1% serves, yet so often we get wrapped up in how many people we're serving rather than how impactful our actions are. I remember as a child, I've read this quote that said, nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing because he could only do a little. Mm. And I think about that often. And I feel if everyone who really wants to have an impact on a veteran would stop and get to know one well and see how they could raise that person up, then we would be moving the ball down the field a lot faster than we are in the veteran service space.
Mm. What a great quote. What a great thought as well. I love that, that emphasis on quality rather than the quantity of things. Well, Anne-Marie, I appreciate the work that you do. I think that what you've described and shared with listeners is really exceptional. And I know that you are having a big impact on the military and the veteran community. And appreciate your sharing more about the Commit Foundation today, as well as your work and insights. I know it'll be tremendously valuable for listeners.
Thanks for having me, Justin. I appreciate it.
Service.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that interview, and I hope that you will check out the Commit Foundation. They are at commitfoundation.org. You can learn about their one-on-one transitioning program. You can learn about the VTC, or Veterans Transition Coaching Program, or the Pay It Forward Fund. All are fantastic things to look at. Other than that, have a fantastic week. Leave us a review on iTunes, please. And I will be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.